everybody. Welcome back. Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Tuesday, October 1st. We are here finally on the doorstep of the Great Wrestling War. Hope you guys are ready. Brought some snacks, brought some drinks. It's going to be a fun week. However, I'm here to talk about MMA and fighting and things like that, and a little bit of wrestling too, with our guest, MMA Junkies, Dave Doyle. It's been a year since we talked to Dave. He's an ardent pro wrestling fan, recently went to two nights of Bola, and also did a trip down to Mexico, see some wrestling down there. So I talked to him about a little bit about what, as a kind of a casual fan, what his expectations are and what he's looking to do viewing-wise for this week. And then we talk a lot about MMA as well. So we kick off the podcast. We'll talk about the Bellator Featherweight Grand Prix that just wrapped up, or the selection show that wrapped up this past weekend in San Jose, where he was, and got some unique perspectives on that. We talked about, lamented a little bit about, you know, Bellator's approach to where they put specific fights, even after they happen, specifically with Michael Venom Page and his big victory this weekend that was essentially seen by, I think, probably a handful of people. We get into that. A little UFC, talk a little bit about the pay-per-view coming up this weekend with Israel Adesanya and Robert Whittaker to unify the middleweight championship, and a whole lot more. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. It's about 45 minutes or so with some MMA talk, some wrestling talk, and a little bit about Dave's journey to MMA Junkie as well. So sit back, relax. Actually, no, stand up, jump around, enjoy. October, my friends, brings with us a lot of good memories for yours truly. I was married in October 5 years ago, this mid-October. My daughter was born in October. She turns 3 in a couple weeks. 11 days or so, depending on when you're listening to this. And it's our annual talk with Dave Doyle, as it turns out. We talked to him last October about a bunch of stuff. And Dave, I didn't even plan this out. But it's actually been since October since we last spoke on the phone. So my anniversary, my daughter's birth, and talking to you, three great reasons to love October.
You forgot the Red Sox winning the World Series.
Oh, my God.
Four out of the last four. You're
right.
Maybe we're trying to forget the Red Sox right now, right?
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know why. I feel like the World Series always ends in November now. But, yeah, we'll chalk it up to, of course, 4 days in October. What am I, 2004. Well, how can I forget that? Yeah, but October's a good month to be in New England. You are not in New England, of course. You're out in sunny California. October is a very good month. And my brother's birthday is also this month as well. I can't believe it's a year since we last talked. There's so much that's gone on, both for you and I. But since the last time we talked, Dave Doyle, you are with MMA Junkie. The last time we talked, you were not. So tell us about, that kind of the experience of working somewhere new, and some of your new responsibilities and how things have been.
Well, it's been an interesting year in the MMA media landscape, right?
Yeah.
Several people have jumped to jobs have opened up in a way that they haven't in quite some time. And, I had been in the position that I was in where I was kind of contracting for MMA fighting and Yahoo and pretty much anyone who would, give me a paycheck for 7 years. And, just kind of wanted to get off that treadmill. And I had, been in touch with Simon Simano, who is my managing editor at MMA Junkie, because he's also based here in LA, and just always found him to be a sharp guy with good ideas and someone who's always, trying to think of like, hey, how can we make this work, instead of coming up with 100 reasons why something can't work. And that, management approach appealed to me. So, this is kind of a small world, and I talked to some of the guys at Junkie, and, it just seemed like a good fit, and it's really been great. I've been doing a little bit of everything over at Junkie. Technically I'm the senior editor, and my main gig is I'm kind of the night desk guy who's putting the site to bed at night, but I'm also, somehow I became like Captain Bellator this month. I was up in San Jose for that event, and I was at the Forum, on Saturday night, and I'll be also be going to their show in Temecula on Friday. So, you know, they're getting me out to events and covering things and getting me just kind of out circulating. So that's good. And I've been doing a little bit of column writing, and some of those columns have resonated pretty well. So that's been fun too. So again, yeah, sometimes you just need a change of scenery professionally. I think everyone can attest to that. And in this case, it's just, I've never regretted my move for a minute. It's we work really, really hard, but we get a good group of people. And I think we're doing, man, I don't want to get into like name checking everyone because I might leave someone out, but we've made some great hires this year. I got to call out my fellow Bostonian, Nolan King, who is a young kid who made his name just breaking one fight after another on Twitter. I'm like, who is this kid? And when he became available, we had to get him. And yeah, it's been a great ride. It's been a really fun, like, actually today is my 6-month anniversary working at Junkie, and it feels like I started yesterday. So it's been a fun year.
Yeah. And your old employers, obviously, they're you're talking about the changes in media. I mean, between MMA fighting, essentially having to retool on the fly with losing a ton of talent, both ESPN building up their group, The Athletic building their group. And we talked to Dan Stupp, and we talked to Sean Alshadi a couple months ago about all that. And yeah, and just obviously, you know, Junkie doing their thing, making changes there. I mean, everyone seems that there's definitely a chasm now between a lot of the established brands and then some kind of the, I don't say the up and comers, but some of the smaller websites. However, some of those smaller sites, you'll have certain writers that'll pop up or things like that. And so it's interesting with more, you would think at this point there, even with so much MMA, there's the opportunity, it can be tough to find because still some of the mainstream media outlets don't necessarily take the sport as seriously or really kind of get into it like the native sites. But there's still, you still, like you just mentioned, Nolan, and there's other people that they come up and you're like, who's this person? Who's this person? All of a sudden they find it's like a running back, Sony Michel, back when you could actually go for more than 2 yards of carry. He finds a seam of daylight. It's just like, oh, no one's going through this lane, and goes through. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, here's a new thing, this way to spin, and a new way to think about things. And it's hard. It's hard in this sport because there's so much in the, so everything really is built around like event coverage and results and who's talking shit about this person. But there's so many different things in there. If you can find a niche, there seems to be an opportunity for you somewhere.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, there almost seems to be a perception like, I don't know, it's almost as if like your outlet is like your team or your camp or whatever. But I'll tell you, I'm openly rooting for The Athletic to make it because you have to think about the big picture in these things, right? Like if there, the more good paying jobs there are from legit outlets, like the better it is for all of us. So, by and large, like this year, we'll see what happens a few years down the road, because there's always a cycle of these things kind of go in like cycles and waves. Like I worked for Yahoo for several years and, I never thought like that was going to end. And then all it took was one absolute just jackass of a managing editor who's no longer in the business anymore, who didn't understand what MMA was, and he just blew up our entire team overnight. So there's always a danger of that happening, but like I said, it's been like a lot of us have been waiting for a year like this to happen, and it's been interesting just watching this develop, and we'll see where it goes. But as of right now, I'm like I said, I have not regretted leaving to go to MMA Junkie for a moment. So things are good.
So you're talking about opportunities and all that, and a lot of it obviously follows the amount of events, right? And this weekend, I mean, we had there's UFC Copenhagen show. We had two Bellator shows. I want to talk about the San Jose one in a bit. It's challenging. It's challenging to keep up with a lot of this stuff, right? I just actually caught up on the Bellator San Jose show this morning. Was able to rip through all those and actually watch the selection show and all that. But it's challenging. There's so much out there, and you kind of look for who's standing out, who's interesting, and all this. And I think to that point, I've definitely been critical of Bellator in the past because I'll get to this in a minute about this. this European series and how they position certain guys. It's really weird to me. But I tell you what, that featherweight tourney, that selection show, that was a lot of fun. There was something different. It was something that it took a minute to kind of understand the format and kind of how things worked even beforehand. It was a bit tough to explain, but now we kind of see this play out for the first time. I'm into it. I love the fact that how they did the random draw, that this the guys could either pick their dates or pick their opponents. You know, most kind of went the way of just kind of making their opponents the last four pick them. I like the fact that the Pitbull brother, Patricio Pitbull, I was able to basically pick his spot and kind of shake things up a little bit. So that whole presentation, that whole thing to me on Saturday was it was an A+. I thought that was a lot of fun. What'd you think?
Oh, I loved it too. You know what? I mean, just think of the raw appeal of, I mean, how many millions of people turn into the March Madness selection show, you know? And I know that's not, I know the teams aren't picking their spots there, but you get what I'm saying, right? Like, people love that, almost of a game show-ish format, but it's a new twist. It's interesting. It made, you know, like, watching the way it unfolded was interesting too, because by and large, you saw guys, they seem to be more about like picking their best spot as opposed to none of these guys, I thought these guys were strategizing, I guess maybe better than I thought they would. Like, they were thinking, like, so, you know, for example, AJ McKee won his fight in 8 seconds. He wanted to get right back at it, and he picked the first show in December. He ended up admitting at the press conference afterwards that he didn't know that the January show was back at the Forum, which is his backyard, and that if he knew that, he probably would have picked that so that he wouldn't have to go make another trip. But, you know, just, I mean, and then you've got Patricio Pitbull fights a 5-round war against Juan Archuleta, in which he actually is one-sided as it appeared. He did take a fair bit of damage in that fight. So for him to not only, you know, select the date in March, but to also, you know, basically just tell Darian Caldwell, like, Darian Caldwell really did absolutely everything in his power to troll his way into a fight with Patricio Pitbull in the next round, including running up to the cage and yelling at him when his fight was over. And, you know, that was Pitbull basically, like, big-timing him and saying, like, yeah, no, I'm not, you know, not going to give you the time of day. And then selecting Pedro Carvalho, who, quite frankly, is probably the easiest fight that was on the board. So watching the way that all, watching everyone essentially think through, like, which either date or opponent is going to get me to the next, you know, to the semifinal level, and not necessarily like, oh, I want to F this dude up, I'm fighting him. That kind of underscores the stakes in the tournament, in that, you know, that $1 million at the end of it is a real thing, that you're not going to let emotions get in the way of making the right pick for your career. So it was a really exciting way to watch fighters make kind of the mundane picks that you would have expected them to make. All that said, yeah, it was a great wrinkle. It was fun. I don't know how often you're going to be able to kind of go to that well, because I don't know how many divisions Bellator is deep enough to do 16-man tournaments in. I don't know that format would work so much when you whittle it down to the final four, you know. But, yeah, it was a very long-winded way, Josh, of saying that was a really fun time at Forum on Saturday night.
I haven't seen any of the press conference. I don't even know, I assume Scott Coker spoke, but was he asked about a lightweight tournament at all, a lightweight Grand Prix?
I don't recall. I feel like that's something that would have stuck out if he did, but he gets asked about Grand. Let me put it this way: Coker's great at pretty much any question you ask him about anything is like, maybe he either answers maybe or will announce something soon. So he gets asked about like various Grand Prix every time he does a presser, and pretty much every time he responds something to the effect of like, oh, that might be a pretty good idea, and maybe our guys will look into that, and sure, we'll get back to you.
So the reason I asked is over the weekend I was being on a fighter's Facebook page, and I was just kind of looking. I hadn't heard about him in a while, and I guess he was quietly released from the UFC, and there was no story about it or anything like this. I wanted to kind of tell who the guy is, because I don't know if he was supposed to say this or whatever, but he's actually fighting in Bellator coming up, and he mentioned he wants to try to get into the 155 pound Grand Prix and make a good showing or something like that. And I was like, huh, first of all, I'm surprised he was released from UFC. And then second, I was like, okay, maybe some of these guys they're signing or giving opportunities to, maybe they're being told, look, we're going to do a featherweight or a lightweight Grand Prix at some point, you know, maybe next year or at least start next year. So we're looking for, you know, potential guys to get into that. So I was curious about that because I haven't seen anything about it anywhere. And that's the only reference I've seen, just happened to be pure, you know, shit luck Facebook on a Saturday seeing this. So I was curious about that. I mean, yeah, I think you're right. There's only so many, I know that, you know, he loves that Grand Prix format. I mean, that's a Coker special. I'm sure he'd love to do it at lightweight if they can get, you know, enough talent for it. But yeah, you're right. It's, you know, it's trying to get enough guys where it's going to make the field's going to have enough names that are familiar enough where you can make it so it's intriguing for, you know, a full year or so of fights. I want to ask you one other thing about
if I can interject a couple further thoughts on that to interject. So in terms of a lightweight tournament, like, so to make a 16 man featherweight tournament, like, they had to call up their former bantamweight champion. They basically, and Darren Caldwell to make this work, they pretty much sacrificed their top bantamweight contender and Wad Archuleta to make this work in the featherweight tournament. So, you know, like depth is an issue. And you also have to consider that. So if you do a lightweight tournament, I mean, if you do this like logically and you do a lightweight tournament, Patricio Pitbull is also the lightweight champion. Is he going to want to turn around and jump right back into another tournament? So you'd have to take care of that as well. So Right. Anyway,
good points.
Carry on.
Yeah. Good points. So that's a good with Bellator for the weekend. The bad, it's not really bad, but it's more kind of frustrating. So they had two shows. They had the one on Friday from Dublin, Ireland, and then which was available. I've talked about this before. So it is available. So they had a show that's on DAZN, partially available on DAZN /Paramount, and then it was on tape delay, I believe, even on DAZN. And then they also had they have this European series, which is just for the European market. And the only way you can watch it here in the States is you have to stream it through the app, which is not the funnest experience. Even trying to find a fight today, it's clunky. You can't easily stream to your TV. It's a little frustrating in 2019. But so the reason I bring this up is, and they've been doing this for a while. They put like Musasi Vlahovic, a title fight. The only way you could watch it here is on the app, which I think is just the strangest thing. MVP, who's this guy they've been building up on US TV for what, 3 years? His comeback fight after his last outing was the co-main event on the European series show, which you had to watch via the app. James Gallagher, same thing. He was main eventing. You had to watch that via the app. They made no reference to there wasn't the MVP fight was like less than, I think it was like 3 minutes long. It was entertaining in the fact there was some controversy in it. He actually got a point deducted for taunting from Dan Mirgalata. I'm pronouncing it wrong, but whatever. He gets a point taken away. There's this, you know, controversy afterwards about, you know, him saying that Mirgalata called him a piece of shit or something like that. But there was kind of just this classic MVP they've pushed on TV for a while, but yet very few people I think actually saw it except in Europe. And my hope was they were going to get some sort of, find some way to play it during the weekend on their other shows, and they didn't. And you can't find it on DAZN. You can't, like, It's just I'm just vending because I don't understand why this is the way it is. And I get it, it's probably because of TV contracts and things like that. But, you know, other groups, including pro wrestling groups, have figured out a way where if it's like we have a deal here, we find a way to at least get it so the majority of people can see it somehow. And the Bellator, for whatever reason, I don't know why this deal seems to be such a handcuff for them. But it's strange that you have these guys you're trying to build up. And what tells me, and we're talking about, you know, how Scott Coker answers questions. I don't think he would answer this directly. I feel like what they've determined over the last couple of years is this, that for Bellator, the U.S. market is pretty much saturated. There's not a huge amount of upside. However, Europe there is, and they want to focus their attention on really building this European audience up to the point that some big fights are going to go over there, and it's going to be a little bit harder for U.S. fans to see them, but that's just going to be part of the deal going forward. Do you agree with some of this sentiment at all? What are your thoughts on that long ramble?
Like, especially the last part. So if there's an upside from Bellator's perspective, like whenever they do these shows in London or in Dublin, primarily talking about the UK shows. Now there's always a large boisterous crowd at the event, which tells me that, you know, the guys over there that they're pushing, the James Gallagher's and the MVPs and so on, are getting over, to use a wrestling term, over there, you know, that they do seem to be onto something. But it is a shame that they haven't been it's mind-boggling that whether you're the USC or whoever you are, they managed to figure out how to get their product in front of everyone, right? Like when the WWE does their shows in Saudi Arabia, which is a kind of another topic, they're still streaming it on the WWE network, and anyone here who's inclined to watch it can see it. You know, if they can figure that out, you'd like to think that Bellator could at least get themselves into a position where, as you alluded to earlier, for example, the Bellator 228 was a five-match show, lasted 3.5 hours, in part because of the selection show. But, you know, if you're dragging your broadcast out that long and spending that much time between fights, yeah, you should take 3 minutes to pop Michael Venom Page's latest ridiculous knockout into the broadcast somewhere and make sure that the people who weren't, you know, in front of their Bellator app on a Friday afternoon get a chance to see it. And, you know, I don't understand the whole, it's coming up again next month. They're doing back-to-back shows on back-to-back nights at Mohegan Sun, I think it is.
Yeah, and that's another thing, yeah.
There's a certain point where even just the most hardcore fan can only take in so much, you know? Like, not only this weekend, not only did we have the back-to-back Bellator shows and a UFC event in Europe, and there was a big boxing match, like, you know, I mean, I understand that the big streaming dollars and the amount of content spaces that they need to fill, you know, it's just kind of the nature of the beats, but it's just, you know, at the very least, it feels like they're just kind of throwing anything at the wall to see what sticks, but let's do a better job of promoting what sticks, you know?
Yeah, I guess, because we're so spoiled by getting, you made a good point, WWE Network, they're putting up, you know, when the Shield had their last match, they put that up on a Saturday night on the network. They made it like a 1 hour special, and they were able to kind of work. They're like, I think our fans might want to see this. And that's, I guess, because we're so used to, especially with, you know, the ESPN UFC deal, that everything's available and it's one place and you can see everything. And there's not a question when you're like, when I want to go see X, I go here. And that's just kind of the weird thing with this is like, even if they're like, look, we can't put it on DAZN because of something, we'll at least put it on YouTube or something like that. Not just a highlight.
On YouTube.
Yeah,
hey,
just
check out what Michael Venom Page just did.
Yeah, but to your point, yeah, they're over almost a 4 hour broadcast on Saturday. That they find, I think the whole fight on or the whole start to finish on the app was 8 minutes. I mean, I think you can find 8 minutes in a broadcast to fit in something that, again, and it's 24 hours after the fact. People aren't going to be, at this point, they're going to be like, okay, any broadcast regulations like that, that kind of like is, to me, is like over, right? Like you have eight. It's strange. It's just strange. So I want to bring it up because, again, I just kind of was catching up with things today. I'm like, oh, yeah, I hadn't actually seen this yet. And if I hadn't, if I hadn't just remembered this randomly today, I would have never seen this fight. And then it would have been like, okay, whatever. And he would have just kind of, it's almost like the absence of these, they're almost like too absent-minded when it comes to, or they kind of like leave your, what am I trying to say? I can't even talk. Basically, the idea that so many of these fighters are, they're like in our lives nonstop. But then part of the intrigue is that when they make the comeback fight, they come back into our conscience. And then, but in this case, you don't give them a chance because there's no way to see this thing unless you happen to remember to go to the app. And that's for the hardest of the hardcore, as you mentioned, like on a Friday afternoon seeing it. So I don't know. It's been a frustration, Mike, because I don't understand it. Maybe someday I will. You mentioned the back-to-back Mohegan shows and stuff. I think that is also kind of weird that, just to me, it's like you have with people these days, and we'll transition to wrestling because this fits this week. People only have so many hours in their day and their week to commit to watching any form of entertainment, be it Netflix, be it pro sports, be it fighting, anything. There's only so much hours in the week, and everyone has a queue of 36 hours worth of stuff they'd love to watch and listen to, but they're just never going to get to it because all of a sudden something goes on top of it. And to me, that was the thing with those Strikeforce shows, man. It's like they weren't all the time, but they were. You felt that there was an impact from start to finish, especially in those main cards. And I have not felt that on this with Bellator really in a long time. And you look at these shows that are split up over 2 days. Like if you just combine them, that's to me like that's in a more impactful night and the stuff that really kind of has that long tail effect. And I haven't really felt that Bellator for a long time.
No, I don't know. Maybe my bias, my point of view is a little skewed by the fact that I was sitting cage side and, for Bellator 226, Bellator 228 and, was digesting it kind of up close, but, for someone who's not actually in the arena that night, like for example, last year, Alima Leigh McFarland's fight in Hawaii was an absolutely incredible moment. Just the crowd reaction, treating her like a superstar in her entrance and the way she won the fight. And, if that had happened in the UFC, under the Fertittas, like, you would have seen that fight replayed 1,000 times by now, on Spike TV, and they'd be doing like little specials about it, and the Dana White will be talking about it over and over and over again to this day. And yet, that absolutely amazing, like all-time great moment, just kind of vanished into the ether because it was on DAZN, and Alima should be a bigger star than she is right now. She's got superstar potential. And that just kind of speaks to, again, there's just so much content out there that, you need to be smarter about how you capitalize on these potential star-making moments when they happen, like Alima last year and like MVP this weekend.
So we'll flip over to the sport of kings, pro wrestling, in a minute, because I want to ask about Bola, your trip to Mexico, and also what you're watching this week. But before we leave MMA, I did want to ask you, I haven't mentally fully flipped over to looking forward to the UFC this weekend with Adesanya and Whitaker, and then where we have Dan Hooker and Ally Quinta and some of the other fights on that show. Just from a general kind of perspective, as you look ahead, I mean, are we really just kind of, I mean, this is obviously the main event is the story of the weekend and kind of seeing, is Adesanya the real thing? But seeing in this position, in this stage coming up on Saturday is, can he kind of complete the circle? And with Robert Whittaker, hopefully, I think the first question is, can he make it healthy to Saturday? I think that's like the first thing because he hasn't so many times before, just injury riddled time after time, especially these Australian shows. But you know what? We're going to see the Bobby Knuckles from from that amazing Yoel Romero fight. Like, what are we going to see? I think there's a lot of questions about who he is at this stage after all these injuries and this time off. A really intriguing fight, with a lot of questions back and forth. Is that what are you thinking about as you look ahead to this weekend?
It's one of my favorite main events of the year. Israel Adesanya's rise has just been meteoric, and it's been the type of not just has it been a rise, but it's been one of those types of rises where every step along the way, remember when Conor McGregor was first coming up and people were like, oh, well, the first time someone brings him to the ground, it's going to be over. Like, every step along the way, there's been this like level of doubt as to how he can handle himself. And then, again, each step along the way, like, fought Brad Tavares, went five really tough rounds with a super tough dude. Just go on and on, like the Kelvin Gastelum fights, the way he was able to just dig down deep in the fifth round in what was still my fight of the year so far this year, show us that he has that championship medal about him. Like, he's like, every question you put in front of Israel Adesanya, he's answered. And now it's just, Robert Whittaker is obviously just ridiculously tough. Look, he's had long absences before, and he's come out and fought someone as hard as Yoel Romero. It's difficult to fight as Yoel Romero and not look rusty in those fights after being out for like a year before. It's just a question of, is this the time that the injuries finally catch up with him? Sometimes the fight, when you really don't know how this fight's going to go, that's a big part of the intrigue, right? And I honestly have absolutely no idea how this one's going to play out, and I'm just looking forward to just sitting back and watching.
Yeah, and we'll see kind of how the story plays out this week. Again, my hope, the first hope, is let's get Robert Whittaker Saturday night, and then and let's get both guys Saturday night. We'll kind of see how it plays out. But there's it's going to be a lot of good talking points out there as the days go ahead. The rest of the card is they're going through this stretch of like 14 shows in 14 weeks. I mean, every single weekend there's a show, so these cards are going to get a little thin. But just kind of looking over this, there's a couple intriguing names. Megan Anderson looking to try to get some sort of footing at women's featherweight. She's on the show, kind of buried on the prelims a bit. Actually, she's opening up the prelims on the main ESPN show, which is interesting because there's not a lot else here with star power. Really familiar names. Jake Matthews has been a prospect seemingly for like 20 years. It's headlining the ESPN prelims. Tai Tuivasa kind of looking to reestablish himself. Diego Lima and Aikin Tohoker. Obviously, the fight, this pay-per-view took a hit with Holm and Pennington being taken off the show. So yeah, be more talk about the show this week. But yeah, it's really it's all about the main event, and be kind of interesting to see what the buzz is like going into it and kind of coming out of it, and what we have. Talk about 185, obviously Jared Cannonier being Jack Hermanson this past weekend, and 185 continues to get interesting with some names there. My hope is that not everyone stands by and is saying, I'm just going to wait for a title shot next. We have Gastelum and Till coming up in November, and that could be an interesting fight for maybe Cannonier next, who is, I think, going to jump in the rankings as much as people actually care about the rankings and what that process means. But yeah, it's I think with you say this is one of your most anticipated main events of the year, and kind of just really looking ahead, in the next 6 months or so, 6, 7, 8 months, whatever it is, there's a lot of intriguing title fights, a lot of intriguing kind of upper tier fights coming up. I think, as much as we complain about the amount of shows, there is going to be some interesting tentpole fights coming up on the calendar. And is there anything you're really kind of looking ahead, even one, a fight that might not be made, that you're kind of really looking forward to seeing?
I mean, it's, I got to go with the obvious one. I've been excited for Nate against Jorge ever since.
Yeah.
Ever since I was at UFC 241 in Anaheim, and it was just like Nate Diaz was pretty much the king of California that night. Like, yeah, those were Nate's people. You felt that it was something like really authentic. And then, you know, Jorge making his, you know, becoming an overnight success after 15 years this year. It just like the, like it restored my faith in the UFC a little bit in the Endeavor area, that they actually like listened to what the people were saying for once, rather than, you know, what consultants with no experience in the fight business are telling them to do. And there was such an uprising and a groundswell of fan interest in this fight that they took that ball and ran with it. So I love everything about this fight, from just the appeal of two old school dudes throwing down, to the fact that, you know, it was the fans who said, hey, this is the fight we want. And then the UFC went and made it. And I don't know, maybe it's just a blip on the radar, but maybe it's an indicator that they're starting to listen to what their fan base wants again.
Yeah, and I'm not into this idea of McGregor Edgar at all. I want to see McGregor against Gaethje.
I agree.
I want McGregor Gaethje. That, to me, that makes the most amount of sense. And you know, I think like I was forever with the Diaz brothers. I'm tired of hearing when McGregor's next fight could be. Let's just make this happen and start kind of getting back on track.
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't hate McGregor versus Poirier in a rematch either. But
yep.
If I was like ranking just on my personal choice, I'd go with Gaethje 1, Poirier 2, and everything else is just kind of nonsense at this point.
Yeah, I'd go Khabib like number 50. I don't need
yeah.
I don't need to see that fight anytime soon.
No, I agree.
So let's go to the real sport of kings, Dave Doyle.
That's right.
Pro wrestling, because you we are entering this very interesting period of pro wrestling. The latest interesting period with the new war starting this week, and we'll see how it turns out. We had Raw's season premiere last night, which felt a lot like last season, if you believe in this whole season thing. The Fox kickoff coming up on Sunday. We have AEW's against NXT on Wednesday. But amid all this, you went to Bola a couple weeks ago, and it's an interesting time on the indie scene in that most of these guys are getting snatched up by somewhere. There's all these talent sharing agreements, which allow guys to appear on, you know, this show versus this show. But just, I want to kind of get an idea of your experience, just the kind of the buzz with the fans and the action you saw, and tell us a little bit about your Bola experiences here.
Sure. So, I did not go to the second night of Bola, just to be clear here. I went to the first night and the third night, and I had a previous engagement on night two. It's a little different than it used to be for all the reasons that you've gone into there. But, you know, but I feel like PWG at least seems to be adapting and shifting to it, and maybe this year with PWG might have been like one step back to take two steps forward. They've done fewer shows this year, so on paper, you look back at the Bola lineups of like 2015, 2016, 2017, and like I feel like 100 years from now, wrestling historians are going to look back and be astounded that level of talent was consistently on display at, you know, first at a 400 seat VFW hall and then at a 700 seat theater. So the star power of the roster on Bola isn't what it was a couple of years ago, but yet at the same time, you've got guys who are the next generation of guys who understand that a place like PWG is the place to be seen if they want, and particularly AEW, where Excalibur has the connection with the company. And Tony Khan was at Bola. He was at the anniversary show in August. So, he's watching all these shows. So you're seeing
the next generation of guys who are hungry, who want it, who maybe don't have the worldwide reputation on the indie scene that the guys who are now in AEW and NXT are doing, but they want it, and it made for one hell of a show. The final, the Sunday night final, look, my first wrestling show I went to was at the Boston Garden in 1982 when I was eight years old. And
it's a lot different.
Yeah, a whole lot different. But what I'm saying, we're getting at is in 35 plus years, like that was on like, can count on one hand, like the best nights of live wrestling I ever experienced in my life. So tumultuous times, but you know, guys who want the brass ring are going for it. And you saw guys, the first one who pops to mind is Jake Atlas. Is just that boy is going to be a star somewhere. And when he debuted in PWG about a year and a half ago, you could kind of see he seemed like a little in awe of his surroundings, and he was younger and inexperienced. And the progression he's made in a year and a half. I did not see his match with Jungle Boy because I was on night two. I heard people rave about that match, but on the final night of Bola, he was in the ring with Dragon Lee, and he looked like he belonged. I consider Dragon Lee like, you know, one. I consider him on the very short list of the best workers in the world right now, and Jake Atlas looked like he belonged in the ring with Dragon Lee. And, you know, I would put him kind of at the forefront of, like, this is, like, how PWG kind of and kind of the super indies craft their road forward is to understand that you're going to lose these guys to the bigger companies. But again, in the span of that 18 months that Jake Atlas has been in PWG, he has grown, and the audience was just, I mean, he was over like the Von Erichs in Texas on Sunday, you know? So I feel like that's again, like a little bit of a turbulent time, but the guys who run PW, you know, Super Dragon and Excalibur and all them are smart dudes, and they seem to be figuring out, you know, they're navigating the turbulence there pretty well.
Yeah, it seems that tournaments like that, it's almost like a, I don't say, see it feel dated, but say Star Search or something like that, where they're basically it's like a talent show, right? I mean, they're going to get recruited and going to be seen by, as you mentioned, and by Tony Khan and WWE reps. And I was intrigued by, you know, kind of like, do they interact with each other, the WWE and AEW people? Do they even acknowledge each other? Like, I'm sure, you know, Tony Khan would be fine with that, but I kind of wonder what that interaction is like. Where they,
yeah, I don't know. You know, now that you mention that, I wish I had kept an eye on that. I mean, I know you can see the WWE guys kind of in the wings off to the stage, and Tony Khan was actually out in the crowd with the fans. So I don't know. I wish I had an answer to that.
And tell us about, you told me that you went to Mexico again, and if you remember, you did a feature for us. I believe it was last year, about your first trip to see Lucha Libre in Mexico, and I understand you went back.
Yeah, it was an interesting story behind that. Was the original idea behind this was to go to Aniversario, right? Essentially the CMLL equivalent to WrestleMania that's held every September. And we were actually, there was a group of us, Todd Martin and Dave Meltzer himself was going, who had never been to Arena Mexico, was going to come to this. And the date that was rumored kept getting closer and closer and closer, and they didn't announce anything. And basically, I mean, I'm going to get into kind of personal stuff here, but essentially my partner is half Mexican and had never been to Mexico City. So we just ended up kind of booking the trip anyways. And it was like, you know, okay, if Aniversario happens, it doesn't. And if not, we'll just go to the regular Friday night show. So as soon as I committed and Todd committed, they, like, literally the next day after booking my travel, they announced an anniversary. It was going to be like 3 weeks later. So it's like, okay, well, that's the Lucha Libre way of doing business, right? Just kind of figuring out on the fly and at the very last minute announcing something completely different. So we just ended up going to what was kind of ended up being a standard Friday night at Arena Mexico. And it's still a fun time. You know, we had second row ringside seats. I think they cost about $20 after the exchange rate. And as far as the show itself, it was interesting because so much of Arena Mexico is like last minute walk up business. And you don't really think about like this the way we buy tickets nowadays, but right around the time that everyone would have been leaving to go to the arena, there was an absolute just monsoon downpour in Mexico City. Yeah. And like that, you could see people kind of think, you know, that had to have kept the attendance down. You could see people just mentally thinking like, well, the card's not that great. Anniversario's in a couple of weeks. It's raining cats and dogs right now. We can skip this one. So the crowd that was there, I want to say there's maybe 5,000 in attendance, which this year apparently is on the low side for them. And it was pretty much a standard show. The one thing that – the two things that really stuck out. One is that the top angle that they had going into Anniversario this year with Ultimo Guerrero and Cyber was just not the crowd. I mean, we are talking levels of non-heat like Sting versus the Black Scorpion, like – the crowd was just not, this was the nominal main event and the crowd were just not having any of it. You could tell that they were just stuck with a turkey of an angle for the biggest show of a year. But the thing that made up for it was, Negro Casas' match with Volador Jr. was tremendous. I cannot gush over Negro Casas enough. The guy is 59 years old. This was their, I forget what they call it in Spanish, but it's the one fall 10 minute lightning match. Mm-hmm. And so at age 59, the stuff that he could, granted it's a 10 minute, you know, it ended up being like an 8 minute match. So it's not like you're putting him in there in like a 30 minute main event, but just the passion of the crowd rooting for Negro, even though he's ostensibly still the heel, and Ed Volador, who's a face, was smart enough to kind of roll with it and play heel in the match. It was breathtaking. It really was. It was like, I don't know. I don't even like Bruno Sammartino versus Larry Zbyszko level in terms of just the love of the legend who everyone knows who's on his last legs. And then seeing him pull out what was like, it was one of those, like, objectively the work was like a 3-star match, but you factor in like the crowd pushes it up to like a 4-star match, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. The atmosphere makes all the difference. Mm-hmm. And that, like, just that one match was worth the, you know, the entire night basically.
Yeah, crowds definitely, you know, it's an obvious point, but crowds can make a match, or they can make a fight, or, you know, I just I think back to the one of the first things that pops in my head for a fight was Randy. Talk about UFC Boston shows, Randy Couture and James Toney. And if you, were you at that show? I was
at that one. Yeah, you were. Yeah. Whole crowd was chanting UFC at the end of it.
You can't buy
that publicity.
It was insane. Like all the, and people were so into this. Like they wanted UFC to beat boxing, and the fight was, I mean, it was as terrible as expected. I mean, cause it was nothing, but it was the crowd just kind of made that a memorable moment. Same thing with any type of sporting event, but yeah, especially with pro wrestling, man. Like if you have, and there's a local group, kind of my home organization, so to speak, indie group, and about an hour away from here in Portland. And yeah, I mean the crowd can take a match that if you see it in front of, you know, a bigger venue, but less people, but you see it maybe versus a tighter venue with the same amount of people. I mean, the atmosphere just can take things from like, that was an okay night to holy shit, you have to see this next time. And that's something I think indie promoters definitely have tried to pick up on and as best they can. But yeah, it's the same thing with, I guess, really any organizations. That's great.
Yeah, it was, I think I got this point across in the piece I wrote for The Observer a couple of years ago, but, like, if you are a wrestling fan, you have to experience Arena Mexico once in your lifetime, period, full stop.
Last question. What are you watching this week for when it comes to pro wrestling? Are you watching AEW live? Are you watching stuff on tape delay, but afterwards, or Fox on Saturday?
What's going on? My plan is AEW live, and I'm sorry, I just remembered the fact that I have to be at Bellator Media Day tomorrow. So let me put it this way. Both of them will be on my DVR. I will watch AEW first, NXT second. And I think I've been pretty vocal about I'm just not a fan of how the WWE presents their products. So I won't be watching Raw. Didn't watch Raw. I won't be watching SmackDown. And I don't – look, that's not – all the respect in the world for the wrestlers who do what they do, who are as good as – you know, any roster in the history of wrestling, but I'm actually afraid with like NXT that like as great as all those guys like Keith Lee and Matt Riddle and Dijak and whatever they're calling them these days and Ricochet and all those guys are, as awesome as they are, like I can't help but have the sinking feeling that if NXT's ratings take off like 6 weeks from now, we're going to see like half the NXT roster is allied with Shane McMahon and half is allied with Vince McMahon. And it's going to be the same just effing garbage that made me stop watching WWE 15 years ago. So, I would rather and just kind of being on Twitter last night, saw that there was apparently a strong angle with Brock and Rey Mysterio to lead off Raw. And I'm like, we're kicking off a new era and you're going with two guys who are over 40, really. So I don't know. You could probably tell by the my comments here, like if I was leaning towards rooting for one side over the other, which way I'm leaning.
I don't like your comment about guys over 40. I mean, come on, Dave. If guys over 40, you know, between yours truly and Tom Brady, two top guys over 40, you know what I mean? I mean, the main eventers can happen after 40. I mean, Diamond Dallas Page. I mean, come on, Dave. What is going on here?
I don't know, man. It's just, when you're starting something that's supposed to be brand new, and it's the same guys who have been in the spotlight. Yeah. I love Rey Mysterio. Don't get me wrong. I know that's got, you know, that might sound a little blasphemous, but I appreciate everything Rey Mysterio has done. But it's like one side of this war is literally trotting out Hulk Hogan. And, you know, the other side isn't. So,
yeah.
Get
ready for Friday when The Rock is the guy that opens up SmackDown on Fox, right? The guy is not ready.
Well, you know what? I mean, The Rock said, The Rock is your Tom Brady.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Very true. All right. Well, you've been very gracious with your time, as always, Dave Doyle. And for those fans listening, if you happen to be in Temecula, California this weekend, you can meet Dave Doyle live at Bellator 229, headlined by Andre Koreshkov versus Lorenz Larkin, a co-main event of Syed Awad versus Goity Yamaguchi and a lot of other fighters who I have never heard of. So good luck with that, Dave Doyle, coming up on Saturday. And anything else to plug? Obviously, MMA junkie, but specific stories you want to point people towards or all that good stuff, the floor is yours.
Just, you're putting me on the spot, and my mind is drawing a blank, so just come to all the great content at MMA Junkie, which is the legacy MMA site, which is best positioned for the future. So, come join us.
And I will, if for those listening to us via the, obviously, just the podcast version, a podcast version. If you listen to us in your phone, whatever, and you don't get the website to listen to this, I will actually include a link to Dave Doyle's story that he did for us last year on his trip to Mexico. I'm making a note of that right now. So if you've not read that, you want to check it out, I would greatly appreciate that and greatly strive to tell you to move towards that. I'm not making any sense of my words, Dave, so I think we're going to call it good. Dave Doyle, once again, thanks for coming back to Josh Nason's Punch Out. Happy October and all that good stuff. God bless you.
You got it, my man. Thank you.
All right. Big thanks to Dave Doyle for stopping by. Again, it's been about a year, so it's good to catch up with him. Follow him on Twitter, which he did not actually mention there. So I think it's Dave Doyle MMA off the top of my head, but it's pretty easy to find. You guys know how to search Twitter. Easy enough. Let's see. What else? We pretty much talked about it all. It's a big week for the wrestling industry. So have fun. I think that's the thing. You can enjoy everything. You can not like some things. You can enjoy some things. It's like a giant buffet, right? There's some things you like, some things you don't like, some things you try, some things you put back, not in a buffet. In a buffet, you really want to just, throw it in the garbage, not put it back. It's in Vegas, guys, in Vegas. But yeah, there's a lot going on this week, and just enjoy it, I brought this analogy before. When I was growing up as a kid, I had like one option because we didn't have cable. That was the WWF Superstars of Wrestling. It was on either at noon or 1 o'clock on WFXT Portland, out of Portland, Maine. And I used rabbit ears to get it, and it was a big pain in the ass. But that was my weekly wrestling fix with the occasional Saturday night's main event. And the fact that I have, hours and hours and hours of live wrestling every week, in addition to, tens of thousands of archived hours, both on the network, New Japan World, if I wanted to, Honor Club, Fight TV, anywhere you want to watch wrestling, there's so much of it. You literally could watch 24 hours a day for days and days and days and days and days, and you'd be all good. So it's a fun time. So I think kind of keep that in mind. It is, this is going to be a fun week. And on the MMA side of things, it's hard. It's hard trying to find all the time to watch this stuff. So a lot of people are picking and choosing. That's why I'm so kind of just a little bit baffled at the Bellator thing, simply because when you're trying to grab people's attention, make them watch something, make them remember something, as much as people like to hate on MVP, that's kind of the idea, right? And you have this guy, and it's a quick victory. You couldn't find 10 minutes on Saturday to show that fight. Those are things that I don't understand, and those are things that I would like. I'd like to see him just clean up, tighten up a little bit. And if there's some sort of contractual obligation where they can't show it, then you got to work to fix that, because that's I don't know. I think trying to isolate people out, that the only way the U.S. audience can see some of this action is via the app, it's a little bit of a pain in the ass, because the app is not a go-to thing. It's not like an app that most people probably have on their phones. It's not just a thing you're going to go to every single day, and it's a little clunky to navigate through. So I don't know. I feel like a broken record when it comes to Bellator stuff, but they can be better. It's a multi-billion dollar company in Viacom. They have smart people running the Bellator end of things. I don't understand. I think they owe fans and media an explanation as to why. I think that would help. So with all that being said, big thanks to all of you for stopping by. And, of course, Dave Doyle. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day, and I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of our fine podcasters here on WrestlingObserver.com. So, again, for Dave Doyle, this has been Josh Nason. Josh Nason's Punch-Out has ended. Until next time, which hopefully will be next week, insert catchphrase here.